Good morning and welcome to Thursday Morning Roundtable. My name is Emily Winicky and I'm the Community Engagement Coordinator here at Syracuse University. I would like to begin, as we do with all Syracuse University events, by acknowledging with respect the Onondaga Nation, firekeepers of the Haudenosaunee, the indigenous people on whose ancestral lands Syracuse University now stands. I am joined today by Sydney Johnson, Executive Director of State and Local Government Relations for Syracuse University, as she will be introducing this morning's speaker. Please join me in welcoming Sydney Johnson.
Good morning, everyone. Well, it's my pleasure to be here this morning and to introduce someone I think the world of, Sheriff Conway. So Sheriff Conway began his career with the Village of North Syracuse around 1977. He then joined the Onondaga County Sheriffs in 1978 and rose through the ranks to become Captain of Criminal Investigations. During his service there, he was assigned to Narcotics Investigations in the Special Investigations Unit. Supervisor of Warrants Investigation Unit and the Road Patrol Watch Commander. In his capacity as Captain of Criminal Investigations, he oversaw all investigative units within the Sheriff's Department, which included two presidential details, always find that great, and a serial bank robbery task force. In 2002, Sheriff Conway accepted an offer and moved over to the town of DeWitt as Chief of Police and Public Safety. In 2007, in addition to that role, he took on temporary capacity as the Chief of Police for the Village of East Syracuse. He holds a bachelor's degree in public justice from SUNY Oswego, and he's completed training with the United States Secret Service, the United States Marshals Service, and the United States Department of Justice Drug Enforcement Administration. Sheriff Conway is a member of many professional organizations that include the International Association of Chiefs of Police, the New York State Association of Chiefs of Police. He also served as a member of the Board of Directors of the Central New York Association of Chiefs of Police and as chairman of the Onondaga County Chiefs of Police. Sheriff Conway continues to serve in his community and has served with organizations such as Rape Crisis Center, Vera House, District Attorney's Advisory Council, and the McMahon-Ryan Child Advocacy Center. He's a lifelong resident of Central New York in Onondaga County. He is married, has two children and three grandchildren, of which he's very proud of. So I was asked to come because I've had the great privilege to work with Sheriff Conway when he was running for sheriff and after his election on the transition teams. I appreciate his insights, his experience, his interest in learning and knowing about the citizens of our community, and the highest level of professionalism. Onondaga County and Central New York is fortunate to have a person of this caliber working in our community. So it's my pleasure to welcome Sheriff Conway.
Thank you very much. Good morning, everyone. And first of all, it's a pleasure to be here this morning. And it's certainly a privilege to serve as Sheriff of Onondaga County. And I always look forward to opportunities to having conversations with people in the community. And as I look through the room, I certainly also want to acknowledge those people in the room who, like myself, also serve the community in the capacity of public service. So I was asked to come here this morning to talk about marijuana and legalization of marijuana, the negative effects of marijuana. I just want to begin by stating, A, I have absolutely no medical expertise. I have no comments on the medical aspect of any of this. I would certainly leave it to those professionals that did. However, as what was just explained in my introduction, And I've been very fortunate in my life. I will certainly state that as well. I believe there's only one other person, he's with another police agency, that at the moment has more time serving in law enforcement than myself. I'm in my 42nd year of serving in law enforcement. And I don't say that to kind of indicate that I know everything. I far from know everything. I don't have any of the answers. My wife reminds me of that quite frequently. But I have been fortunate enough to have service in public safety in this county for more than 42 years, and it actually started at the very ground level, started as a young police officer in the Village of North Syracuse. But through those years, one of my assignments actually for 5 years in the early 80s was in the Drug Enforcement Unit, which was serving as an undercover drug officer. And I know that that was a long time ago, being back in the 80s, but I certainly remember those experiences. And then through the years, as was mentioned, I actually came to supervise that unit, came to supervise investigations, and then obviously had the ability to serve in a managerial or administrative role with the Town of DeWitt Police, and now here is your sheriff. With all that being said, I don't have a lot of answers. But I was hoping to have here this morning with you a conversation and to share with you some of what I have learned over all those years, what I have seen over all those years, and maybe what are some things that need to be considered further. I really believe that probably this is a foregone conclusion that it will be legal in New York State. That's my gut feeling. And if that's the case, that's the case. But I just want to discuss with you for a few minutes, and again, give you some information here from what public safety sees relative to not only potentially this becoming legal, but what we already see now in our community when it comes to illegal drugs, and even comes to drugs in general, you know, prescribed medications. And some of the not frustrations, but maybe some of the difficulties every time we have a new law that's passed by lawmakers, and we in law enforcement are tasked with making sure that those laws are enforced and where maybe some of those things break down. Let me just say that I'm a member of many organizations that was already also mentioned in my introduction. And again, I know everybody is very, very busy, but my colleagues and I very, very rarely see when potential legislation is introduced, certainly at the state level, and acted on and then put into place, when it involves public safety, very, very rarely does anybody come to us and ask us, "We're considering this. Can you tell us what some of the ramifications could be, because it could be a law and you'll be tasked with enforcing that law?" And I know here in Onondaga County, I know we have obviously members of, you know, the governing body of New York State. And again, it's not criticism, but I've seen through my career where certain laws have been enacted that pertain to public safety. And if we had a little bit more input or inclusion in it, I think a lot of things could have been avoided that were pitfalls. I really do. And I'm not saying that we should have the ultimate answer, but in 40 plus years, I've really seen the horror of drug use in this community. And to the point where about 2 years ago, when we began to see the problem again of heroin in our community and fentanyl in our community, was the first time in my career that I ever used the word epidemic, because that's truly what it was and what it is, an epidemic in our community. And I see that just on the number of calls that deputies go to, state troopers go to, police officers go to, where people in our community are literally just dying. They're being poisoned. So, what do we do about it as a community? Many things. A lot of people have come together. And then I see a headline where it says, well, you know, it's declining. And I get scared. I get scared because I know declining doesn't mean the problem is over with. and I see it every week, two times, three times a week, I'm getting a report of a deputy responded to a call of an unconscious person in our community, in Liverpool, in Camillus, in DeWitt, in the city. And sometimes, many times, we're too late. We may be carrying Narcan, which I never ever thought in my career police officers would be carrying the kind of medical equipment we're carrying now to try to reverse the effects of fentanyl or an overdose, but this is where we are. It's in professional people. It doesn't matter where you are in this community, in Onondaga County, people are at risk. So we have that to try to get our arms around, certainly together with other partners in our community, get our hands around that and get on top of it and try to keep people from dying needlessly. So I see that. I saw years and years ago in the 80s, you know, LSD and mushrooms, and probably some younger people wouldn't even know what that was. But I speak to the ill effects of drug usage, the ill effects, and how it impacts us in ways that most people in this room wouldn't know about, wouldn't see. Because we don't have a report every week on the number of people who overdosed from a drug, illegal or otherwise. We don't, but law enforcement sees it because we're dispatched to every one of those calls, especially if it's a death case. We're there and we see it. And then we see other situations as well. Has anybody just today saw poor driving? Saw somebody fail to signal, fail to have courtesy, fail to whatever? I say this, and I'm leading into this context of the conversation, because I see poor driving all the time. Not just people who are impacted or impaired by alcohol anymore. Not a drug at all. You know? They're texting. They're watching. They're doing something other than paying attention to the road. And so I often tell people now, I'm not diminishing the danger of people driving under the effects of alcohol, but at least they're looking out the windshield at the road, where the person that's on their phone doesn't even see maybe the person crossing the street or the person merging into our lane. But that was something that came to us, obviously, because of the great invention of the cell phone, and then texting came, and it's wonderful. So now we have all these kind of technologies that are going to try to block texting while you're driving, all these things. But again, law enforcement is responding to those complaints. We're responding to those crashes. We see the horror and the ugliness of it. And yes, there are people driving that are impaired by drugs, prescription drugs, potentially maybe marijuana. How do we address that? How do we react to that? I've read some studies, and again, I didn't think it was appropriate to bring those here and discuss those, their numbers. But my concern is that if we have more people operating vehicles while they're impaired, I guess impaired would include through the, you know, using marijuana, that's going to impact everybody in this room. Because if you drive a car and you're going at 10 o'clock in the morning, any place, or 10 o'clock at night, we're going to be at risk. Have we thought about that? Have we really considered that? But that's the reality of the situation from where law enforcement stands. And again, I only bring this to you this morning to share this with you. Because my fear is that, like, at least some legislation, well, let's put it in place and then we'll figure out the ramifications of it later. And that concerns me again. And I could give you examples of that, where then the resources of public safety then becomes taxed or overtaxed or overstressed to try to deal with it. Do I put more people out on the road looking for impaired drivers now, as well as people alcohol impairment and texting? I have an obligation to keep everybody safe in this community, keep you safe on the highways, but I know my limitations with my resources. And I, you know, whether it's at the county level or the town level, It's still tax dollars, and we always are trying to maximize the use of tax dollars. But we're about, perhaps, maybe to legalize something that when I sit and think about it, all these things that potentially could happen. For instance, let's say it becomes legal to grow it. Perhaps somebody grows it to the extent that it's now, you know, your neighbor smells it and they call and I don't like the smell and well, they're going to call law enforcement. I want you to take care of that. Somebody can only be growing this much. Okay? We'll have to enforce that. I understand that they're talking about 21 and older. Well, what about under 21? Is it going to be like cigarettes or alcohol? Can't use it? Does everybody understand that issue we have in our community with underage drinking? Or it requires more thought, and I think it requires more thought to the extent where more organizations that would be impacted by it need to have a voice, need to have a role in it. I know they've already been talking about, well, we'll let each individual community decide whether they want to legalize it. How is that going to work? How is somebody maybe from Madison County going to be able to come over here to get it and then go back to Madison County? What kind of issues is that? And I'm not even talking about the continued black market distribution of it, something I'm very intimately aware of. You can get fentanyl over the internet. Now, how hard that is to intercept, how hard that is to control, but yet it's happening and it's going into illegal drugs right now, and it's killing people. Plain and simple, it's killing people. It was invented with a proper use, and like most things, people are now trying to make a profit or whatever in their twisted mind, trying to traffic in these drugs, narcotics. These are just some of the things that certainly in my head are swirling around when this is being discussed. I'm a much more understanding person than I was when I was 20 or 30 or 40. The life experiences I've had certainly have made and shaped me to be more understanding. And so I'm not about to come into this room and say, you can't let it happen, you whatever. I'm not that way. But through my experience and my knowledge and being in this community in Audubon County my whole life and working in this profession most of my adult life, I just believe that there needs to be more work done. Because once we get it in place and then we say, well, we'll figure out everything out. We'll figure out all that later. I know it's going to be figured out by law enforcement. And people will call 911 because they have nobody else to call to complain about some of the things that may come as a result of it. But I'm a realist, and I know I've read some of the polls and studies that apparently more people than not in New York State favor it. Okay. I'm not about to put my hand up to a locomotive that's coming down the rails pretty quick. But I do enjoy this opportunity to have a conversation with you in this room as community members, just to give you a little bit of perspective of what we're facing now, what we faced in the past, and what potentially now we may face. Because I know there's people that, you know, are on both sides of this issue. I understand it. And a few weeks ago, you know, somebody came to me and said, well, Sheriff, where are you on this subject? Are you for it or against it? And I'm like, I don't even have all the facts. I don't even know what's being proposed in Albany right now. So I guess if you're pushing me on it, I guess I'm against it because I don't know what's going to be in the language of the law. You know, will the age be 21? Will it be 18? Will you be able to have it in public? I've heard nothing other than, well, it might get in with the state budget. It might not. And again, you know, that concerns me. So Just some other analogies. I'll just give you some of examples of some of the things that are kind of thrown at law enforcement. I think I read something too where there's talk about requiring people that ride in the back seat of a car to wear their seatbelt. I don't know if you heard it or not, but there's at least a bill introduced that everybody in the back seat now will have to wear their seatbelt as well by law. Good, bad, indifferent. I don't want to sound cynical here, but I think some of these laws we have that are created, are meant to generate revenue. If you go to court in any of the villages or any of the towns for anything, you have a speeding ticket or seatbelt ticket, are you aware that the judge can certainly, you know, find you guilty, not guilty, and plead guilty, not guilty. He can set a fine or she can set a fine. And then there's a surcharge. Are you aware of that? Are you aware of what the surcharge is now? Judge has no discretion over the surcharge. He can charge you $5 as your fine, but you're going to pay another $115 or $25 as a surcharge. And you're going to send that to Albany. I have a problem with that. I know that at one point, when I was in the town of DeWitt, there was thought of, you know, speed limits on town roads. I'm going to maybe write it under this section of law. The town could take more of the fine money in. And when it was approached with the state, it was like, well, you can do whatever you want, but you're not changing that, writing that ticket under that. You're going to write it under the state section. Because in my view, they wanted the revenue. And I'll stand here and tell you that when it comes to something such as seatbelt enforcement, the state will give law enforcement agencies monies. Here's $20,000. So you can send your deputies and officers out, probably on overtime, to enforce seatbelt tickets. Now, why did they give us $20,000? Because I believe strongly that they're going to see three times that amount in revenue. I'm not being cynical, but there seems to be, certainly in my view, a pattern here. And so when we start talking about the legalization of marijuana and taxing it and revenue, I'm a little suspect based on other things I've seen happen. And I know that there's been talk about where the revenue will go. But I'm old enough to know that when they started collecting tolls on the thruway, it was to keep the roads on the thruway up to par. And that's not happening. If you've driven it on any other exit ramps or entry ramps. So again, this is my perspective here locally. I certainly wanted to give you an opportunity for some questions if you had it. But more importantly, I just appreciate the opportunity to come before you and have this dialogue, hopefully, about something that, you know, probably is going to come our way, but concerns me as a representative of law enforcement of the trickle down of that or the effects of it in a bad way.
Good morning, Sheriff. My outlook on history is that man forever has looked for a way to become high, whether it be mushrooms or drugs or alcohol. Something. Given the reality of human nature, what would be your choice of how they get high?
I've never been posed that question, so. I don't smoke. I've never smoked in my life, so you know I don't know where that falls in any of this as far as the health risk or whatever. I'm not talking about medical marijuana. This is just about the recreational use and how it's going to affect us, and are we ready for that? Are we ready to accept all these potential consequences? I know for a fact that the black market, the underground, will not go away. It won't. because we always we'll always have people who are obviously trying to make money. I understand that. And they won't want to pay a tax on it as a business owner selling it. So we're going to have that, and we're still going to have probably then competing forces. And there's more information out there from some states of which this has happened and what law enforcement has found out as a result.
Are you being asked for your opinion, advice, or thoughts from the powers that be that are going to pass these laws? You mentioned you seldom get input. In this particular issue, are you able to voice any of your thoughts on this?
Yes and no. We can certainly make a trip down to Albany and, you know, try to get in and lobby for it. I would rather see the local elected representatives from the state come to an organization like which was mentioned in my bio, the County Chiefs of Police Group, the Central New York Police Chiefs Group. We meet on a regular basis. We meet once a month. There's 25 of us in a room. We've never had somebody come and say, geez, there's a potential bill, being considered, and it speaks to public safety. Could I come to your meeting, and could we discuss this, and could you share with me some of, what you might... Yes, they're always, they know of them, and they're always invited. So that's what I would like to see more of.
What would you tell them?
Well, we would have prepared for them information about the topic, and I know they would come away with a better overview from this area here of law enforcement because of the representation we have at these meetings. We have people from the state police, the city police, the sheriff's department, the FBI, they're all there. It's a great group. But I've been part of that group for probably 15, 20 years. And I could count on one hand with some fingers left over how many times an elected representative like that came, to speak to us or meet with us. I'm not being critical. I'm just speaking to how these things seem to happen.
Thank you so much for being here today, Sheriff Conway. Seeing that, I'm curious about how many arrests are done now from your end on people who are smoking pot in our county, and do you liken it with the same effects with people with who are operating with alcohol in their system? Would you think it's just the problem would be a big influx of the same kind of problem you have? So first I'd like to know if there's a lot of arrests for marijuana.
The answer to that first question is no. Just simple possession of marijuana right now is called unlawful possession of marijuana. It's a violation. A violation is not a crime. So there's no arrest record. And if you were to be caught with marijuana in that situation, you'd be given what would be considered a traffic ticket. Looks just like a traffic ticket, and it would, tell the charge, give you a date to go before a judge, wherever it was, and then you would go on your way. We're not talking about bail or anything like that. So that's unlawful possession of marijuana right now. Where we mostly see that is where we may conduct a drug investigation of a house or someplace, and the person has their different types of drugs. And so, again, based on weight, that would be what your level of severity of it. But if you were walking down the street and you had a joint or a blunt, that'd be unlawful possession of marijuana is a violation. And the follow-up on that question is that we see now, I think you've maybe read about it, it seems to ebb and flow where we have people that are taking some kind of crazy substance and putting into things like marijuana. People are smoking it and they become wild in the middle of the street. It's bizarre behavior. It's crazy. And that ebbs and flows. Comes into our community, leaves. Comes in, leaves.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm not sure we've got as good a handle on alcohol in the community as we ought to have. We see, especially in the neighborhoods with corner stores and the alcohol consumption that goes on there and underage drinking, and we can keep calling and complaining and the hoops you have to go through to get it stopped. I really have a lot of fear that with marijuana, it's going to be the same kind of thing, that we're still going to have impacting, especially our really young people. And do we have the resources to enforce this?
We have limited resources, and certainly you are familiar with this, Doctor. We have limited resources, and this is not standing here with a plea where I'm saying, you know, please give us more police. We could always use more police, I'm sure. But we have limited resources to address that in addition to other things that we're responsible for in our community.
Hi, Sheriff. My name is Steve VanDeWall. I'm the deputy chief for a consumer advocacy organization out of Rochester called Rock Normal. I want to thank you, and I really appreciate you have a very reasonable position on this, and I really respect you for that, so thank you. My organization would love to be invited to that next meeting with the chiefs of police. We would love to have an educational conversation. I think a lot of the time that the media tends to pit us against each other, and this is a very complex, very convoluted issue that you can't possibly expect everybody to be an expert in the industry. You know, so while we're experts in the cannabis industry, we're not experts in law enforcement. So I agree that we need to bring all the experts to the table and have a collaborative conversation, and our organization would love to be a part of that next meeting.
Great, great. I'll give you my business card when we're done. Thank you.
I'd like to broaden the focus just a little bit, Sheriff. With your many years of experience at different levels of government, from village, town, county, what are your thoughts regarding cooperation, consolidation of police forces within our communities? Do you see advantage? There hasn't been much lately on this subject. Many years ago now, the town of Clay disbanded their police force, of course, and the sheriff's department took over. And at the time, the world was going to fall apart. For the people in the town of Clay, and I think it's worked very smoothly and it has become very efficient. So are there any efficiencies that you see that can happen if you cooperated more, if there were consolidations of police agencies within the county?
Sure, great question. I was part of the consolidation in DeWitt when Village of East Syracuse Police merged with the town of DeWitt. So there's another example of consolidation. And since becoming sheriff, I was responsible for three departments, civil, police, and custody. The corrections department up at Janesville was under the county executive, and through a referendum vote, the corrections department is now under the sheriff's office. So there's another example of consolidation. Consolidation certainly could continue to happen in law enforcement here in our community. The efficiencies won't be realized overnight, especially when we deal with collective bargaining agreements, but it's possible, and we've seen it happen. I've seen it, been part of it twice, both in DeWitt with the village and now as sheriff with the corrections department up at Janesville. The one good thing that we have here in our community that we take for granted, and I know this when I travel to other parts of the country and I speak to other colleagues in law enforcement in this community, I mean central New York, not just Dodge County, we work tremendously well together. We do not have turf issues. We do not have some of the issues that law enforcement agencies in other parts of the country have. We are on the same page. We have a very robust drug investigation task force in this area that includes the sheriffs, the city police, the state police, the Drug Enforcement Administration, the FBI. That is a great thing that goes on that you don't read about or hear about, or maybe should you, that are doing collectively, bringing their resources and where they can get their information together and pooling those resources and carrying out the kind of investigations that we need to have, which when it comes to drugs goes well beyond our borders in Onondaga County, goes beyond state borders, as you may know, and now is international. So yes, consolidation could still happen more in law enforcement. I'm always welcome to be part of those discussions and share my experience in that.
Good morning. I'm curious if what trends you're seeing in other states where marijuana has been legalized, whether it is less people in the court system, younger folks being arrested, more, you know, what are we seeing in trends? Because we probably could expect that here.
Sure. What I've probably referred to most is the state of Colorado, because that is the state that's had it the longest, and again, it's what I read. So you know, obviously interpret different things from what you read. But things such as a higher, an increase in impaired driving, certainly. The one thing I'll just quickly mention to you, if you're driving with alcohol, too much alcohol, we have devices that help detect it on your breath. If it's a very serious one or fatal, that we could draw your blood, and obviously it shows up in your blood. But for driving while impaired, meaning driving while you're, you know, under the influence of marijuana or prescription drugs, that's a much harder detection for law enforcement to be able to make out on the street. It requires specific training that probably lasts about 2 weeks. There's no device for it, so it's basically the officer's observation based on their training to determine initially whether you may be impaired. So that's going to be harder for us to detect, is my comment on that. But that's just one area. They've also seen where it actually has flooded the market now, because you have legal storefront selling it, and you certainly still have the underground, and now there is more supply than there is demand, and now there's some competing going on. So some of those things we're learning from that could be an issue.
Thank you, Sheriff, for being here. I was only going to ask you one thing, but I got to comment on something, if I could. My good friend Don brought up consolidation. In 1997, the county put together they called it a Blue Ribbon Panel, and all the chiefs of police were invited, and they have the third meeting. They said, well, this is a great idea. We would have efficiencies. We would save money, but you can't do it while I'm in office. And that's the problem. The only way consolidation, in my opinion, is going to happen is if the people in this room and the people that vote demand it. But in regards to drugs, I'm totally 100% against drugs. And I've seen the good friends of mine die both of drugs and alcohol. That being said, I think it's a health issue. And you know, there's no difference to me, the man that works or the woman that works 11 to 7 in the night shift and then goes to a local bar afterwards and has a party, and there's a lot of police that do that. You know, it's a terrible thing, but you can't make people do something that they're going to do. You can't make them stop. I mean, they're going to do it. Mm-hmm. It doesn't make it right, but they're going to do it. So I personally believe that as bad as drugs are, that you've got to make it legal. That would give the police more time to go after the things that are really problems in this community. Thank you.
Okay, great comment. If I could just follow up on that. You know, it's like other things. We ask people to drink responsibly. We ask people to gamble responsibly. I didn't even touch on gambling. But again, I know, and especially from talking with clergy members, that gambling is an addiction. So what happened? We legalized gambling. Well, it doesn't mean that people still don't have problems with gambling. They do. You don't hear about it. It's under the surface. You read that little disclaimer that, you know, a casino may put up there about, you know, gambling addiction services or something will be available for you. And I've already started to see that maybe with marijuana. It's what's underlying that you don't hear about, because some people at least get embarrassed about it. I know of people that lost their marriage, that lost their house through gambling. So there's another, let's make this legal, it'll be okay, everything will work out, kind of. But it all comes back down to responsible behavior, plain and simple. And when people are responsible, everything is fine. But not everybody in our society is responsible and has responsible behavior. And that's where we come in, people who are irresponsible.
Good morning, Sheriff. You mentioned when there's a stop for impaired driving and the officer expects that there's marijuana involved, but there's no definitive test and relies on the training of the officer to make that conclusion. What happens in court with a case like that? Is the officer's basis for making that judgment sufficient to go through a court process? For, I'll use the word conviction, that may not be the right word, or is it the inability to have a definitive analysis, what happens in the legal environment?
Well, that's a great question. And certainly one of the things that's always challenged is that officer's expertise in trying to identify that. And that's where the training comes into play. And as I said, it's extensive training that you have to recertify. It's costly, but it is possible. And, you know, people are convicted, but it's more difficult than it would be with alcohol because of what I already explained with the lack of tools.
I want to piggyback on that question a little bit regarding how you detect and how you may suspect, because I'll drive down the road anywhere in the county, anywhere in the state, and oftentimes I'll get a whiff of what I know is marijuana. I know what marijuana smells like, mm-hmm. but I know what's in the car in front of me because it's coming in from their windows in through my, you know, air refresher, whatever you call these things. Is that grounds enough for police to pull a car over? And when you pull somebody over, obviously they roll down their windows. You think of the old Cheech and Chong movie, which is great. Clouds of smoke come out. Is that grounds enough for an arrest or for ticketing?
No. More importantly, I don't know of any officers that would utilize that kind of method to try to further the investigation. The situations that happen mostly with impaired driving is an accident or obviously you're drifting from lane to lane, some of the same indicators that somebody that's alcohol, too much alcohol would have. So the smell of it or whatever is not what's driving police officers to pull that car over or to investigate further. It's really not. But again, I'm not suggesting it should be. I'm suggesting that we have so many other people now with bad driving, and I already mentioned the texting and stuff, that we are just inundated with those kind of driving habits, let alone trying to find someone who just may be smoking marijuana in their car. It's plain and simple. We have, you know, stop school buses. I don't want to get up on a soapbox here. Stop school buses. There couldn't be any more devices to put on that school bus. And yet we have people, and you've read the articles, blow right past the stop school bus. What's going on? But we commit deputies out there, you know, in the morning, in the afternoon. We may have read some of the details we have. We expend resources there. They're great resources. But then now those are not resources we can put over here for maybe the cars that are speeding down Casson Road or... this is our challenge in law enforcement. We accept it. But some of the stuff is just to me, and I know I'm sounding old now, it is crazy. And people cannot say, well, I didn't know that that bus was stopped. We have arms that come out, we have lights, there's nothing more that needs to be done. It's just civility, common sense, and respect for somebody else's, you know, kids, children.
I just have two questions regarding his question. So just for the record, can you use the odor of cannabis to conduct search and seizure in a traffic setting?
I don't want to be quoted by saying yes or no.
I'm really not
here to, you know, discuss, you know, a legal question like that.
Can I rephrase the question? If I was pulled over for like speeding 50 and a 35, something that wouldn't warrant search and seizure, and you smelled marijuana coming from my car, would that warrant search and seizure of my car?
It may or may not.
It's a yes or no question.
I'm not going to get into a yes or no question.
But it's a very simple question. It's a huge issue that no one's really discussing.
It's not a simple question. It's not a simple question just based on yes or no, what you just gave me.
But we have... Can I ask you another question? Are you allowed to be a law in your department and consume cannabis?
Pardon?
Can you be like in law enforcement and consume cannabis? Is it allowed? Like part of being a police officer, I don't think it's allowed to be a cannabis consumer, right? So we have people, the officers that have been kind of ousted from participating with this industry, rightfully so, being able to subjectively use the scent of cannabis to conduct search and seizure. That's really happening. And I think that's kind of the major issue at hand. So that's kind of why I'm pushing this issue for a yes or no question, because this is a very serious issue that no one's really talking about. So can you conduct search and seizure using the scent of cannabis at a traffic setting?
Somebody else have another question? I began this dialogue with, I wanted to have a conversation.
I'm just having a conversation. I'm not trying to be opposition.
No, you want a yes or no question that requires a longer discussion of which.
Thank you, Chief, for being here. And congratulations on your work so far as chief. We'd met before. I'm sheriff, I mean, when you
Thank
were
you.
Chief. So
thank you.
Thank you for being here. It's early for me. Just a couple things. I'm also concerned about alcohol abuse. That was brought up. And And especially with our depressing weather, certain times of the year, you know, we have maybe more because of the depressing weather. Then we have this almost euphoric reaction when we have good weather like yesterday. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious, how are, you know, the agencies working together? That's one line of question that you could respond to. And also about impaired driving generally that we all see with people on their phones, eating, putting on makeup, whatever they're doing in cars. So I'm very curious about how the agencies are working together. You said that there's a lot of cooperation on enforcement. So it'd be good to hear about the prevention mitigation side up front as well. And then one of my concerns about marijuana, I'm an older person. I remember the old days, you know, when it was not as strong as it is now on the street. You know, the statistics to me, you know, they don't even reflect how much different it is. I've been out and where it's legal. I've experienced it. I've been in a rental car in Colorado where I get in the rental car, it reeks so bad it's given me a headache. Okay. You know, because a rental car smells so bad because there's no public place to do it, so people are all smoking in cars.
Okay.
And that's very difficult. So that's just my personal experience. How could legalization help in that regard? You know, the fact that it's so much more intense of the black market marijuana. I'm kind of torn either way myself personally, but I'm concerned that with it being illegal, you know, people are just getting these street drugs. You know, I'm concerned that maybe if it was legal, you know, there would be regulation, better quality, something like that. And then my other line of question, which is much quicker, is, okay, I'm sorry, but you need more questions, is about liquor licensing. And liquor licensing is done from a local option. You know, it's local control. Have the needs of the neighborhood been met in terms of liquor licensing facilities and bars, et cetera? What lessons have been learned from local licensing of alcohol that could inform and best do implementation of marijuana licensing if it was made available recreationally?
Okay, well, I'll just take your last question first. The liquor licensing is done through New York State. New York State controls the issuance and the revocation suspensions of liquor licenses. So that's really not something that local law enforcement gets involved in too much as far as the licensing aspect of alcohol.
But permitting the location is a local option, isn't it?
Well, I'm not sure whether that's a municipality decision, but the actual licensing of whether someone can have it or not is done on a state level, New York State Liquor Authority. And they control everything from there. They do the inspections, they do the site visits. That is totally under their purview, and they would get assistance from the state police on those.
What lessons have been learned from that licensing process for legalization of marijuana if it were to happen?
That's a good question. I haven't thought much as far as the licensing. Obviously, I deal more with the use or abuse of the alcohol once someone acquires it, rather than, you know, somebody having a license to have it. But I guess it goes back to, you know, what's going to be involved in that license for marijuana? What are going to be the requirements, just like what are the requirements that someone has having a liquor license? You know, who they sell to, how they check identification, all those things, obviously, are going to probably be fleshed out, hopefully. I don't know, because it's another area that hasn't really been discussed when it comes to liquor versus marijuana. But are we going to have storefronts right next to a liquor store? I don't know. Are they going to have the ability to purchase that marijuana in the same place as where they sell alcohol? I don't know. I don't know what the legislation is being drafted that speaks to any of it.
Thank you, Sheriff, for being available in this public forum. I think this is a good example of how government should work, so thank you for that. In your opening remarks, you're talking about the drug problem in general, and I was wondering if you could separate out the marijuana question from other sorts of drugs that are abused, including heroin and fentanyl. Can you have a meaningful conversation about marijuana, separating those other drugs out, or do you feel that they're so intertwined that it's a difficult issue?
Well, I mean, obviously at the moment, marijuana is illegal, as are cocaine and several other drugs as well. So they all fall under that realm of they're illegal to possess, they're illegal to sell. Do some people just sell marijuana and not sell other illegal drugs? Yes. Are people tainting marijuana with other substances just like they are with heroin or cocaine? Yes. Are they mainly doing it for profit? Yes. So in that vein, those are all similarities as far as breaking out the marijuana. Probably the one thing I could say is that the marijuana use right now is probably more open, even though it's illegal, than some of the other drugs, or certainly the other drugs. But other than that, it's all illegal. It's all underground at the moment. Do we see connections between them? I think those connections, if they're there, are mostly profit-driven more than anything else. I mean, is marijuana being grown here locally to an extent? Yes. Is it being brought in from other states or other countries? Yes. It's as little or as big as anybody wants it to be. I'm concerned right now about the public health aspect of it, based on what I said starting in the beginning of what people are putting in this stuff, and then people are smoking or shooting up or whatever, and the ramifications, which is they're dying.
All right, please join me in thanking Gene Conway for coming to speak with us.